So there is that. Yeah.
Oh, I do. Wait, I do have some topics that I know that Senkai wants to talk about too, but we'll get to those.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams.
Hello and welcome to Sync Floyd, the Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon and movie podcast, which I only discussed. Okay, so I'm not going to go on with more bullshit about the fake podcast being that, but what happened last week? Okay, there's Cosmos news, there's lots of other news. Finally, watch Robot Jocks. We're going to have to talk about that.
Nice.
But my question to all of you Robot Jocks enjoyers out there, have you watched it with Dark Side of the Moon playing?
Is that really a thing, though?
I mean, it's a thing when you make it a thing, isn't it?
Oh, okay. All right. It's not like a Wizard of Oz thing, right? It's just a.
I mean,
it's a Frey thing.
You kind of play it, and then you see what's happening. But you know where there's the bit where the bleacher bums get wrecked.
Yeah.
It happens perfectly to the kind of drop bit in Money. Like you get the dun 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 robot crash, 300 people die, something like that.
There's so many robot crashes that eventually it's got to line up with some sort of symbol crash, right?
It's like specifically like the section change lines up with 300 people dying. Welcome to Game of Nodes, the Validator podcast. This is not in fact. So anyway, I was like, okay. A weekly podcast on validation, whatever. Anyway, so back to Pink Floyd. We watched this. It was good. You know, it was not Paul Blart Mall Cop, but it was a good. There were moments of sync. It was kind of.
Where are you going with this?
Well, you know how you watch Pink Floyd.
Did you watch
a film and then you play Dark Side of the Moon? Right.
Is that the only way you watch Robot Jocks, or do you actually watch it first apply it? Every movie just has Dark Side of the Moon overlaid.
So what actually happened, right, was a mate came round. We started watching the film, and we got most of the way through, and then we stopped because we needed to put the baby. We needed to put the baby to the bath and then to bed.
Yeah.
My other half was away with work, and. What then happened was she walked back through the door substantially later than the baby's bedtime, and we were stood with a laptop on the side in the hallway, bouncing the baby to keep him calm. Mm-hmm. Halfway through Robot Jocks with Dark Side of the Moon playing on a phone. That is actually what happened. Like coming home from like being away for work, and this is like, I'm sure they'll be fine and responsible. Like worst case scenario, he'll have a couple of friends over, and that was the scene. It was like, what is going on here, and why is the baby not in bed?
Is that your soothing music? Like we always use like White Noise, but are you using Dark Side of the Moon?
I quite often use Dillinger Escape Plan or Russian Circles, actually. there is a video of me when the Wii One was very, very, very small, getting him to sleep using Eat It Up Worms Hero by Cardiacs, which also works. And Loveless by MBV. Like, he's asleep by halfway through the first verse of that fucking, you know, of Only Shallow, right? It just straight down. Anyway, yeah, it's not Paul Blart Mall Cop, but there's a bit of sync there. There's a bit of play. So we were like, okay, we're going to start a new podcast, right? And it's going to be just like watching, you know, just let's just see every film, right? And just sync it up to Pink Floyd. And my friend was pretty keen on this. I was like, this has to be a podcast, right? And of course it is, right? It's I think it's two Aussie guys, actually. And it's called fucking Sync Floyd.
It's a good name.
It's a good name for a podcast, isn't it?
It's a good name.
I was like, bookmark that one, boys. That's going to get me through a long winter. Whenever I'm feeling low, I'm gonna check that out. They seem like good lads. So there you go, big plug. If you're into that kind of shit,
link in the show notes.
There will be a link in the show notes. So it looks like it ran for like over 100 episodes, and then they ran out of steam. And their final episode was they actually just did a commentary track for Wizard of Oz, Pink Floyd. And then they were like, that's it, we're done.
We're done. Yeah, I mean, that's how you end, right?
We're done.
Devil Wears Prada, Moonfall. Well, they really went deep on some of these. The Princess Bride sync with Pink Floyd.
I think the premise of it is they watch it on the podcast, but presumably turn down the Floyd so that you don't hear it and they don't get demonetized or whatever. Yeah. And then they review the sync as you go, like they react to it. I think that's how it works.
Okay. 1,000 monkeys, 1,000 typewriters type of thing, right? Like
what I've noticed about the whole Pink Floyd syncing thing is that if you just watch a film with Dark Side playing, at some point something entertaining will happen if you have the patience.
Yeah. Agreed.
But very few films are Paul Blart Mall Cop. So that's the one where...
is that the one that you think that's the one that syncs the best?
It's the best one. It's one of the best ones that I've seen. Like it
really?
Like when Breathe comes in, somebody gets hit by a fucking car when the first chord plays in Breathe, and it's
like
kind of pivotal to setting up the rest of the film. This person just gets fucking nailed by a car. There's a scene where I can't remember if it's Paul Blart or somebody else in the thing is shooting a gun, and it happens in sync to the guitar. There's like a decrescendo in Money where it goes dun 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 dun, mm-hmm. dun. That descending chromatic figure. It's chromatic, isn't it? I think it's chromatic. Somebody shoots a series of targets in time to that. I mean, hey.
Okay.
I think there's a scene where he's like doing a weird dance on a Segway scooter, and it's like at the point where Great Gig in the Sky is playing, or maybe it's Brain Damage is playing. I can't remember. But it's one of the kind of quite mellow tracks, and there's just like, what's his face, the actor, just on a fucking Segway spinning around. It's Paul Blart 2, isn't it? It's not even Paul Blart 1, it's Paul Blart 2 that syncs up.
Is it?
Yeah, I think Paul Blart 1 is a non-starter, but it's Paul Blart 2.
They made two of those fucking things?
Apparently so.
I guess so.
I've never actually seen it. I've only ever seen it with the volume off and no subtitles and Pink Floyd playing, so... I actually don't know what happens in that film. Just had to kind of guess based on context. Something about an arms fair. I assume it's like a subtle commentary on the militarization of the American police force as expressed through mall police. But that's just a guess based on.
I'm sure that's it.
I'm sure that's what that fucking film and that.
I'm sure that's what they're going for.
I don't even know what the actor's name is. What's his name? Kevin James. It's not Kevin Bridges, not Kevin Spacey. I'm all out of Kevins.
So what's up, fella? 2 weeks. A week off. I don't know. I felt naked.
I mean, he's just been growing that fucking beard, yeah.
I know. I'm just looking more and more like Hugh Jackman any day, man. You're looking good.
What? Nah, man. I need a haircut. I don't look shaggy as fuck. Just like...
Did you grow all this that in the last 2 weeks?
This old thing.
This old thing.
Just been like ultra busy. Hey, lots of stuff going on in life and work. You know, mm-hmm. It's hard to get a moment. But here this week, I tried to weasel out of it to go and build my fence, but no one would have a bar of it.
Dude, not 2 weeks in a row. Are you kidding me? You don't get a fucking pass on that.
I've totally got like 15 enormous holes with people walking past at my house. So, they kind of do need to be filled in with fence posts. But mm-hmm. I can spare 90 minutes of my day before Amazing. Meeting the guy, I suppose.
Amazing.
What did everybody else do on their week off?
Was it a week off?
Yeah, you're 90 minutes off from last week.
it was just one evening off, wasn't it? Because it was, none of us could physically actually do.
Somebody was sick. Somebody just didn't want to do it.
I was dead on the couch last week with just a flu.
Yeah,
and it was not pleasant, but it was nice in that it just sort of disappeared as well. It was like
flu my tits.
I did better.
I did this fucking podcast all through the winter just after the baby had gone to nursery for the first time. I'm not having that as an excuse.
What, being sick?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, fucking, I'm not Superman.
Have some paracetamol and get on with it.
I'm not Superman Frey.
pager duty waits for nobody.
I think you just
I still respond to PD though.
You just live in a warm country. You're like, oh, the flu. I must faint like a 19th century dandy.
Bet like, your ass I was still getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to respond to pager duty alerts though.
Why the fuck is pager duty pinging you at 2 a.m? Like, what the fuck was possibly happening in Cosmos that needed you to get up at 2 a.m?
All kinds of shit happen.
Well, you know, 2 a.m. his time is like regular.
Oh yeah, it's true.
Like when all the shit is going down in the States.
Exactly.
I mean, shit. Exactly. To be fair, we did nearly lose a validator on Monday. That was funny.
With
like,
what?
The disk issue thing. Like, that was crazy.
The disk issue thing.
Aptos.
Yeah. The fact that I guess we can't talk about specifics of that yet because there's no release or whatever. But there. It looks like a thing that was in test resulted in a massive comical log bloat.
That was just a load balancer logging, right? It has nothing to do with what was going on in the actual chain.
Yeah, but it's logging errors on the Val node, I think.
Oh, or RPC requests or something, or it's doing some goofy ass thing.
Something screwy. But like, look, any log growing by 50 gig a day is doing something screwy, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So it's one of those, like, you know, if you've got your alerting, like pings you, just been like, hey, by the way, you should just be aware this motherfucker be growing like 50 gig a day. And you're like, that sounds implausible. I'm going to go check that out. And then you go look at it the first time and you're like, the problem is I didn't know what it was yesterday. So now I have nothing to go off. And I just think that my monitoring is fucked. Right. Tomorrow we're going to look into this. And you write down the number on your pad. Right. And then the next day, like, something happens. And then you're like, shit, can't make it into the office today. What was the number I wrote down? This is my system being shown. So anyway, it was a couple of days before I was like, no, this shit is definitely growing at 50 gig a day.
Shit's broken.
Yeah. And then actually just, dealing with it was like, it looks like it's this thing, but surely it's not. Like, it can't, that's really fucking noddy. And then I realized that the numbers were way off in terms of, what the alerting was slightly wrong. It was alerting correctly about the unexpected size of the growth, but it was not alerting correctly about how much disk space was left. And the actual partition that was being used by the Docker containers in question. So not the overall disk. The overall disk was like, whatever, 50% used, but the space available before the containers would fail was like 94%, and it was growing by 1% every 60 minutes by that point. And I was like, oh right, this is gonna fail in like 90 minutes time.
I mean you make it sound pretty glamorous, but all it was an HA proxy log that was
it was just completely garbage. But it just so happened that at the point where I was like, I've got a bad feeling about this, I think actually that disk is way smaller than I think it is because of the way it's partitioned on that particular node, I was like, I think that node's actually going to fail like today, and I don't have time to like not look at this. Cause like normally like you're like, whatever, a log is growing on a reverse proxy. Like, what's it going to do? Like I can deal with this like tomorrow, whatever. It's not a node down, you know, until you're like, oh no, it's going to take down itself and it's going to take down the validator and it's going to happen within 90 minutes. And then you look at it, it's like 98% full. And you're like, okay. Yeah. And you're like, all of like, the classic, because also like the way the file lock works and stuff is that the Docker daemon is going to have the file lock. So you need to remember to do the config change so that you can basically cycle the daemon while the containers stay up and all that. Just make sure you don't actually nuke it yourself or nuke the volumes. There's just like, you never like to pull the switcheroo on a production service, do you? Right? That's just
unless if I know it's going to be, you know, 2% to full and it's heading that way, and fuck it, I don't give a shit. Like, we're going to miss to solve this problem, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
So anyway, that was shenanigans. That was kind of interesting.
So that's from that. Moving right along before everyone fucking falls asleep with your huge problem of having a full disk.
that is the essential validator problem, though.
It's not, I don't know anyone who could go on with so many fucking words about having a full disk as you just did for the last 5 minutes. But We do have a guest this week. It's pretty rare we have a guest recently. I think there's few and far between. Maybe no one wants to come on anymore because you guys just sit here and talk shit for 90 minutes.
What's this you guys shit?
You know, I haven't said anything for the last fucking four podcasts. I just sat here and did work. So anyway, Schulze or Serp, being the guys who are validating on White Whale, did either one of you guys want to introduce Sancom? And then Sancom give us a bit of information about himself, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Sancom, why don't you give us a little,
take it away.
Yeah. Why don't you do that? Why don't you give us a little background on yourself and we can talk about White Whale a little bit.
All right. So real quick, I'm Sancom, CTO of White Whale. Now, big name, you know, big name in crypto. So I'm the lead dev. And White Whale is OG Terra. But mm-hmm. things, you know, didn't work out so well on Terra Classic. So team continued to build. You know, we birthed Migaloo, the chain, which is, you know, yet another Cosmwasm chain. It has a couple of, you know, interesting, you know, tweaks here and there. For example, restaking, you know, that's one of the most interesting things. Live in production, we can talk about that later. We have a cross-chain protocol. DEX, flash loans, live on a couple of cool chains, Osmosis, for example. You probably saw the Mad Scientist. So, you know, we had our fingers in that as well. And then, you know, you probably know, you know, Bob, Blah, Blah. I can never pronounce this from Bob the show. Yeah, I don't know. Never saw it. But, you know, he's running our validators. So we're doing that as well. And yeah, that's pretty much what we're doing over at White Whale. And I gotta ask you a question, guys. How can you have such, you know, your cameras are so good in your setup? You know, do you have some kind of side hustle besides validators? I know validating in the bear market is not profitable, so
it's fucking profitable. I mean, this is a professional show.
I have my iPhone taped to my monitor, so
how do I actually? It's the same thing.
We had we've tried many different things, and it turns out that the good shit is just sticky taping your monitor, your phone to your monitor.
You mean something like this? Like, you know, this?
Oh, look at that thing? That's far more than we have. I noticed that's not on too. That's good.
I do have a ring light over here, which is why I've got, like, you know, it's about the two-tone face situation. But we do have good mics, all of us, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And cameras, the Frey has a piece of shit eBay, like, camera. Schulze, I'm not sure. His camera's looking all right these days. And Serp and me use our iPhones, I believe, taped to the monitor. So, yeah, well, maybe Serp's got a better situation for holding his, but
no.
I had a tripod that I would put it on, except I left it on the plane many months ago and haven't replaced it yet because I don't want to pay $6 for shipping. So, you know, a roll of duct tape was $12, so I use it.
Smart.
But Schulze's microphone looks like he's doing this ASMR shit. You guys ever saw?
Well, I am. That's the thing.
You saw it, Mel. You saw it. You know, these girls were eating like carrots, you know, really loud.
That's right. It's
weird stuff.
Mercedes.
Really, I just haven't gotten a boom. And so I'm actually, my microphone is on my role-playing dice box, actually, to lift it up.
Impressive. Get the right height.
Oh, you don't have the... Right.
You don't have the thing?
No, I don't have a boom, no.
Oh, shit, son.
No boom.
Well, so Sancom,
I was actually just pulling up a Genesis file from Migaloo because it feels like it's been a year, a little bit more. When did we launch?
I think it was February something.
2023?
Mm-hmm.
How's the first year been?
You know, from the chain perspective, you know, maintaining a chain is a lot of work. I can tell you that. You probably know. And what a lot of people in the, you know, users, mostly in the Cosmos, don't see is there's a lot going on behind the scenes in terms of development. But there is, you know, more than just one, you know, emergency upgrade, you could call it. You know, everybody's just scrambling, trying to fix things together. These things are usually a little bit tense. So it's been all right until today. But so far, you know, we're quite happy with the whole situation.
Yeah,
I guess that's one of the considerations, I guess, that every network has to make when they start adding shit into the stack. Like, you know, there's vanilla Cosmos, which is pretty safe for who. There's not really much that can happen. But once you like start adding in, I guess the main one is Cosmwasm. Once you add it in, like, you know, you're just going to be doing security patches for the rest of your fucking life. So, it kind of depends on whether you've got a permissioned or permissionless Cosmwasm implementation as well. You can sort of, gate the problems with permission. But when you're permissionless, you sort of have to be on top of all of the patches, yeah? And so
Is that true, though?
White Whale is, on the unique position to be on both sides of the fence because we have, you know, a cross-chain protocol, Cosmwasm. Mm-hmm. So we're on it in a lot of places, and at the same time, we have our own Cosmwasm chain. Certainly, it gives you a very interesting perspective on the whole process. But you're right, Cosmwasm is, you know, we're lucky nothing, you know, broke so far, I think. Or, you know, there's good devs out there. So they're doing a good job.
I guess from a developer perspective, it adds some amount of workload, I guess, is what I was getting to in comparison to a chain that wouldn't have Cosmwasm. For example, something that just sort of used their own custom modules SDK. Or their own modules. Yeah.
But then again, you know, when you start doing, you know, custom stuff, you know, what's better, open source with hundreds of eyes on it or your custom, you know, five team thing?
Well, you can open source your own thing. But, you know, I guess what I'm referring to there, though, is that your own module is like, it's not susceptible so much to outside people, you know, trying to exploit holes in it because, you know, Cosmwasm's like a whole virtual machine thing. There's tons and tons of stuff that can go wrong with determinism. Whereas like, you know, your custom module or your own module might just do a handful of things well and not really take too much input from outside to be able to balk it. So, you know, I was just sort of referring to the workload and maintenance, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think you guys have, I mean, you've had obviously from IBC Go and I think a couple other like, oh shit releases that came up through those libraries and everything else. But outside of that, it's been pretty quiet in terms of upgrades, right? Like it's only been maybe two or three for the year or something, three or four. Like doesn't seem like it's that, you know, there's not that much. So which has been really nice too. So anyway, like I don't remember like, the White Whale doesn't come across as a chain that we run that seems like it needs constant maintenance, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's obviously true. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, the Megaloo chain, you know, we had the exact same, you know, thought process as you guys had. You know, the tech stack is new. So if you try to be smart and go cute and fancy, you know, you're going to run into issues. So, you know, sometimes simple is better because simple is safe.
Yeah. How's it been like growing the user base and trying to, you know, acquire users in the Cosmos and how much has the Cosmos ecosystem helped you in that? Or has it been, like, how's that been as being somebody who is involved in running a chain?
So White Whale had it or had some community already, you know, back in the Terra days, you know, they followed us to our new chain. So it wasn't a cold start. It was a very warm start. And We had the fortune of, you know, building through the bear market with, you know, a lot of people that, you know, stayed through, you know, during the bear market. So I'd say we have a quite engaged and pretty cool core community that's really all over, you know, what we're doing, working with us, you know, with in DAOs and you know, their own little, you know, ecosystems of whatever they can build. So that's pretty cool. So we have a really tightly knit group of people here, tightly knit group of protocols that built with us. Mm-hmm. But in general, during the bear, it was really silent. there wasn't much going on. I think, you know, if the bear market would have continued for another half year, you know, we'd probably see more than just one chain shut down. But luckily it didn't. So now, you know, users are coming back. You can see the KPIs going up. So more daily active users, more transactions and so on. So that's fantastic. But I don't know about you guys. You know, Bitcoin's at, you know, flirting with all-time high, but to me, it doesn't feel like full-blown bull market yet. Is that just me, or how do you guys feel it?
Yeah, I'd say there's a – well, historically, the bull market, if you believe the Bitcoin cycle, like historically, we haven't really hit what is the bull market territory. You know, it usually happens a good time after the halvening. So, but, you know, it's just – because it's been that way in the past, I guess doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be this way now. And the last time we had a bull market, there was a catalyst, which was the COVID pandemic where everybody was at home. So they needed something to do. So buy shit coins and be a degen. It was like top of everyone's radar. So, you know, this part of the cycle is not really like a massive catalyst at the moment. So I don't know. We might not have hit a bull market yet, really. I don't think that the last six months has really pushed the market up that much in comparison mm-hmm. to like previous bull markets. But definitely, it is doing better, and it has certainly become more profitable to be a validator, or less detrimental to your bank account.
You know, go back half a year, you know, or, you know, November last year, you know, peak or, you know, bottom bear market. How many of your validators were profitable and how many were, you know, in the reds?
Oh, shit. We were losing money for a year.
That's a terrible metric to think about, dude. Don't bring that shit up.
We're head in the sand, guys, man. We just, you know. We're validators for life until we run out of money.
So you've been in the trenches too, I see. That's good to see.
Nice. Well, I mean, running a validator is like running a VC, meaning you invest in a shitload of things and one or two do really well and one or two are pretty even and eight of them are fucking massively negative. It's basically what it is, right? Your hope, like then the law of averages, you know, you can try to be smart in terms of trying to reduce the number of chains that you're running to be able to, you know, try to be a little bit smarter around picking winners. Or some folks take the, I'm just going to validate every damn thing and build automation around that and just play the averages, right? Which is also, those are good strategies. There's nothing wrong with those strategies, especially when you drive the cost down of actually supporting chains that don't make any money or that you and just ignore.
Launch a token for stakers on your validator. Big money.
Launch a token for staker. Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, usually around in the last bull market, I believe. A bunch of validators did this.
That whole launch a token thing,
Defund was going to try and do that, right? They're going to create like a validator ETF.
Yeah, I think, I don't think that is going ahead, is it? I saw some news from Defund recently, actually.
Well, no, maybe, I think Defund is stopped.
Or was it
I think Defund... Well, I mean, Mystic is still, they're still building a ton of stuff. So, but I'm not sure what the status is of Defund. But the idea, I agreed. I mean, launching a token, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the world needs more tokens. I don't know if the world needs validator tokens either, but.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of validator tokens.
Don't you have one?
I've got a shit coin that I gave out, but I wouldn't call it a validator token.
I was hoping you're going to walk into that one. I literally set there that up.
There we go. Sorry, I literally set that up.
I'm a king holder. What the hell?
Yeah, man. I have an ill-conceived marketing gimmick before it was cool. And
it is cool.
I think I like a token in mind.
Yeah, now people just like to remind me of my fucking misgivings of yesteryear. Thank you.
When can I sell this thing?
You fucking prick.
Hilarious.
When can I sell it?
The king token.
Yeah, every now and then people come into my Discord and they're like, when are you going to list king? I'm like, fuck, man, I thought we were over this. Like, never.
When king.
When king.
Yeah, that was I'm going to go find it on DowDow and then I'm going to post on Twitter and be like, oh, right now.
So, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of disappointment around the King token because it was just meant to be like a fun thing and we're going to do some fun shit with the DAO. And then, you know, everyone's like, oh, fucking, you know, how much is it going to list for? I'm like, list? What are you talking about? And I'm like, this isn't meant to list, man. This is just fun. And people are like, what? We fucking delegated you to get this shit. And I'm like, oh, fuck you. Yeah, I was like, luckily overshadowed by like more drama elsewhere. So,
I mean, there's no shortage of drama in the cosmos.
No, but we don't really intend to do anything with that token ever. Unless we, I don't know, maybe in like 5 years' time, if we still have delegators from like that airdrop, maybe we'll like, I don't know, ship them a jumper or something. A hoodie.
Back to the bull conversation from before. Like, I think it's weird, like, actually, excuse me, to see like Bitcoin still in the 64,000-65,000 range. It really hasn't shed the way Ethereum or a lot of the alts have over the last couple months. I'm sure that's related to maybe just the dollars in the ETF and just like that aspect of financial help coming in. But it's done far better than the other shit that we track. That's for sure.
My impression with that though, which is, I mean, obviously it must be like the ETF pressure, right? Because
I would think,
like, just I guess, like, kind of anecdotally, like, fucking sample size is very fucking tiny, but like a lot of the stuff that I've seen, which is like narrow windowed lens on prospective future stuff coming out of primarily the City of London that I've heard about in any respect, is very heavy on random fucking shit on ETH and L2s of various stripes of one kind or another, a lot of asset tokenization type stuff. So like it's interesting because like all of the noise that I see about like, oh, future stuff that's coming, that's like kind of institutional boomers, is like, but like where the money will be ultimately, as much as I'm like, it's just institutional boomerism and whatever. Like, I mean, that's where the money will come from. Like, no fucking users probably, but money.
I like that term.
Well, you know, but this is the kind of shit where it's like, oh, right, well, we have assets, right? And obviously assets should be tokenized because reasons. And then we can do that and sell it for a markup because that's financial services, right? Like, you just smoke bomb and we're in it's a whole new thing, you know? And whatever, we can just like, and yeah, even better, we can probably make even riskier derivatives, like by, you know, doing it in a unregulated casino or whatever. Look, we're validators. We're the biggest scumbags on the fucking planet. So I'm just saying this from like a jaded point of view, not from a judgmental point of view. I'm just saying that is like, why are you tokenizing an asset unless you plan on exposing it to DeFi? Why are you exposing the only thing that crypto assets have over the already existing financial services casino is further degeneracy. So you must conclude logically that that's the purpose of the endeavor, right?
For the degens?
Yeah. More degeneracy. That's the
more degeneracy.
I mean, at this point, fucking like 80% of crypto is degens. So
you think it's that little?
Yeah, I mean, it's way higher than that, man. It's like 99. Yeah,
as I was saying that, I was just trying to, in my mind, fill the other 20%. I was like,
And the remaining 10%, scammers.
I mean, the only reason might not be 99.9% degens is because there's probably a good 10% of scammers.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe it's higher than 10% of scammers, actually. There's a lot of scammers in crypto.
Why do these halvings always drop price?
Because it's amazing. It goes up.
At least lose faith.
The idea that Michelle the news.
Yeah, I guess so.
I have a theory, and that is that the market always does what inflicts most pain. And when everybody thinks it goes up, it crashes into oblivion.
So, no, that's just when I'm trying to sell my shit.
Afterwards, we pump. So please do the needful, and then we can go up finally.
You know, you got to shake out the paper hands.
Is that what it is?
And then, and then we can go up.
Then we can go up.
Yeah. unfortunately, number don't always just go up.
No.
Well, but also, like, Bitcoin is already at the point where surely Bitcoin is big enough now where any movement from the halving is priced in.
Oh, yeah.
And clearly, the halving, it doesn't reduce that much Bitcoin at this point. It's yeah. 30 fewer Bitcoin per block now. So what is that? 6 per hour.
Yeah.
200 fewer Bitcoin per day being sold, maybe. That's yeah. really not that much at this point. Which,
like, you can see how, like, a constriction, but this is back to, like, the constriction in supply where it's kind of going to present an actual, like, liquidity of Bitcoin problem will work itself out over time, which is why you see the price trend up, but is why you're not going to see, like, an immediate impact. It's just, like, a slow thing. And the problem is, like, it's been oversold, right? So when the thing happens, everybody's like, and now I'm going to be rich. And then that doesn't happen because it's already priced in. And so it's just like, I guess we're selling them.
Is that why burning tokens never does anything for stock, for price as well?
I mean, burning tokens for price probably doesn't do anything because the tokens are a shitcoin. So that's the problem. yeah, I mean, kind of. Like, in a long enough time scale, every token's a shitcoin, except for maybe Bitcoin. But that's only because, like, the boomers have got in on it now, and you can't fight City Hall. So
not everybody who has an ETF is a boomer.
I have an ETF. I'm just saying, okay, that, like, if right. you still think Bitcoin is great, you are a fucking boomer. That is what I that is all I mean by the phrase Bitcoin.
No, you're a boomer or a holder.
Yeah, or you know, your diamond hands, whatever. Like, I spent mine on pizza. No regrets. No regrets. Whatever.
The phrase. No regrets. What do you think about the ETH ETF coming or not coming?
I mean, inevitably, yes, right?
It'll come now. Yeah, for sure.
It'll come now.
100%. May?
When? Oh, in 3 years?
Yeah.
3 years?
Depends on different. Ooh, it'll be different territory.
I would put down within the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would guess that within the end, within this year. And, like, again, different territories and whatnot. Like, there will already be, it will already exist in other places other than the US before it exists in the US, would be my guess. But
I don't know, man. I think ETH fundamentally is quite a different coin to Bitcoin. So
is that your submission?
I don't think they're going to go with the analog and say, "Well, oh well, fucking Bitcoin is a crypto, and this other thing is a crypto, so fuck it, let's start doing it." I think they'll go back to the drawing board and go, "Okay, well, how does Ethereum differ to Bitcoin, and how does that pose a risk to consumers?" And then there'll be a whole fucking thing for, like, another long time. I don't think it's going to be a straightaway thing.
I mean, that's already happened to some extent in the UK anyway, which is that the way the crypto assets are regulated is derived primarily off of perceived consumer risk. So that's why, like, creating a shitcoin and marketing it is, like, a regulated activity, whereas, like, you know, running nodes isn't. Because, like, you just create some random fucking ERC-20 propensity for harm. Hi. you know, just shuffling around some ETH. You know, they're going to be worth something tomorrow.
Boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I think from, like, a, you know, from an ETF perspective, though, those types of decisions are made, you know, on net. How is a mass adoption of this thing going to affect the mums and dads of investors? And I think that they will not be too keen to just say, well, it's another crypto, let's go type thing. But I mean, on a personal level, I would definitely, if I was going to be investing in crypto, I'd much prefer to do it through an ETF, in my own name, not in business. Like, if I was personally going to buy crypto, I would rather do it through an ETF-like structure simply because it reduces admin. And it is just, there's existing tooling in TradFi that makes that type of thing and tax easier. Whereas when you start buying the shit and moving it around in accounts, it just becomes a nightmare. So, I mean, if there was an Ethereum ETF, I might be inclined to buy it.
So you're not a proponent of not your keys, not your coin?
Oh, man, it's fucking...
As a validator?
It depends. Like, yes and no, but It depends on, like, I think that there is a space for, like, custodial crypto, and it's just from a purely, like, tax perspective, and I don't have fucking time to deal with all the admin of like finding out where all the transactions go and the buy prices and the sell prices and tracking capital gains and all that type of bullshit. It is just easier. And for the type of investment and the amount of investment, I would say, yeah, don't hold the keys. But, you know, I think that's a whole different thing when you're talking about, like, a regulated body, BlackRock type situation with presumably a robust security regime. I think that's completely different scenario than some random ass sex in a jurisdiction that's skirting the law and a high target for hacking. I think, like, you know, not your keys, not your crypto applies a lot more there, and that it's at higher risk than if you are investing through a highly regulated.
That's not strictly true. That's not strictly true, right? Because if you, fuck it, name a Kraken, right? For just sake of argument, right? If you had some custodial Kraken run on the hub, right? They've got a val there. So if you ran, if you had some custodial Atom with Kraken, right? They've got, I'm going to guess, they've got like 3% or something of the hub. Like, they'll have some quite large number. It's publicly visible. So somebody knows, right? If you can own, if you can take down the Kraken validator, you're going to stop 3% of the hub's voting power getting staking rewards. If you can take it down and keep it down, right? So it's a big target. Like, and by not, although I suppose that's true of any validator you actually pick. So validation maybe is the bad. Validation is not the weak point in that. I think the weak point is that how a custodial service actually does their wallet management, I suppose, is the actual weak point. If for some reason they were running a small number of wallets, then you're in a position where you're effectively just part of a massive pot of honey for a potential hacker, right? And the way that hack will happen to a big company is social engineering. It's not going to be like elite fucking quantum computing. It's going to be a combination of social engineering and like a strip club and then a blackmail photo, right? To some DevOps engineer. And then you just happen to be one of a number of consumers who lose your money that day, you know?
I just got distracted.
Yeah. I could see that in your eyes. You just it's like, I'm Reese, fine. Whatever, man.
Reese just sent me some link to my DAO, King DAO, to fucking gamble the treasury on something.
What, of King tokens?
No, of the Juno tokens that are in the King DAO. Oh. It's like, just gamble entire treasury. I'm not even sure where to. It's
a coin flip?
Yeah, it's coin flip. Yeah.
Is it? It's always a coin flip.
100-sided dice. You put it all on 10.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yes, Reese, I will sign the multi-sig. So sorry, that's why I was distracted and I've got no idea what you were talking about.
Lovely.
How do you feel about that?
It's fine. It's fine. I appreciate this. For fuck's sake. Whatever, man. You gotta hit the pitch with the better, right? That's how it works. Sometimes I make a good point, sometimes I make a bad point. But
more importantly, Dog Whiff Hat has passed what? Pepe. Yeah. It's like the, now it's the where are we in the 30 number 38 on the CoinGecko list. It is past Pepe, past Arbitrum, past
is that
the graph,
what was
Optimism, big?
Is that,
Betch,
is that the effect of halving, do you think?
I don't think it is.
I think that must be directly related.
Taking profits, put it right in a Dog Whiff Hat. $3.27. It's working on what's next? What's it working on now? Heading towards OKB. then head towards Filecoin, heading towards Adam. It's going to pass Adam here soon.
It'll pass Adam soon.
I mean, Mantle, Aptos
might have more utility than Atom. So
it might. It might.
There is that. Because, I mean, it does have a hat. And Atom doesn't even have Cosmwasm, so.
Not yet. It was voted. Wasn't that voted in?
Fuck this. I didn't validate the hub, so.
That passed, right?
Did it? Well, yeah, but that was just a signaling proposal. So, sure, it passed, but it doesn't really mean anything. They don't necessarily.
No, I know. It means, like, there's demand that somebody
devs do something. What's your sense on this? Is it a good move? Is it a bad move?
What do you think?
I think it's a bad move because, to a certain degree, Atom is a meme coin for nerds. And the thing with meme coins is that as soon as you give them utility, they die. And if you put Cosmwasm on the hub, then it's not a meme coin for nerds anymore. It is a smart contract platform. And then it's in the same, you know, mental bucket as Osmosis, as Neutron, as Kuji. And then you place the two next to each other and you see, all right, Osmosis is doing that much volume. How much is the hub doing? And you see, all right, there isn't even a DEX on the hub. So, all right, you go to Kuji. How much is lending volume? You know, nothing. Then you see, man, you know, this chain sucks. So the hub's picking a fight. It needs to be very careful. You know, it should be careful of which fight it should pick, I believe. And, you know, this is a fight it could lose. Unless, you know, it's able to attract top-tier devs and build, you know, next-level shit that, you know, shadows everything.
Yeah. Isn't it already losing the fight, though? Like, the price has gone down, hasn't really recovered, and people don't really have a lot of reason to buy at this point, right? So, sure, that's an argument that it is losing, but if they don't do anything, then they're just going to continue doing nothing.
But to that point, I think Senkai makes a good point. It's easy to invest in the potential, and it's easy to hold tokens because of potential and those types of things versus the reality, right? And the reality comes, and then wouldn't this go against like interchain security and those types of things? Because now you have chains that are interchain, but they could be competing against the chain that's providing that security, right? Like, why would I be an interchain security piece and launch a permissionless Cosmwasm chain or do something that I think that the chain is providing security is going to usurp, right? Or just take over and just do themselves, like with somebody else, or they decide that they're going to deliver that same liquidity or that same structure. Like, I this is a good point. Like, I do think that like if you're going to be a chain, like you'd be a security provider, then be a security provider. But once you provide these other like actual utility, if those things are garbage, people leave. Does that impact interchain security? People leave. Like it does create the opportunity for like a mass exodus to say this isn't going anywhere. Where before it was just like it was always like tomorrow, right? Like this will be great in a couple of years, or we're going to find what's going to be next, or blah blah blah. And now you're in a position where like you're battling reality. I mean,
Atom really is like the chain that needs to die, really, right?
Well,
because the whole point is like Atom got launched because you need to launch a chain with the SDK to prove that the SDK worked. That was the purpose of Atom. Mm-hmm. Having fulfilled that purpose, it has no purpose because the whole point of the SDK is to facilitate an ecosystem of chains. Every time the hub tries to go like, oh, we can do this other thing. Well, there's already a chain doing that, right? And all the hub has is like liquidity and often a higher token price, right? So yeah, I mean, all that's going to happen is Atom halts more than it used to, and it probably won't do a whole lot more. I think they'll copy and paste every bit of smart contract code that exists publicly out there from all the other Cosmwasm chains, because that's not an advantage in any way as long as your code is open source. And they'll copy paste it onto the hub, and that will happen, and very little of it will get much TVL attraction, because unless you have a very well thought out product roadmap for how you're going to put stuff together in an order that results in a compelling narrative, then you just end up with Juno, right? In the end.
I mean, it's an interesting thing, right? Because there's so much dependent on a chain's life as to what happens in the first like 6 months. Atom, yeah, at this point, it still has a pretty big treasury, but it gets reduced more and more every year. And they don't have like a strategic fund for paying for devs to come in at this point. I mean, they do, but not a meaningful one. Like Dimension has like $500 million in a strategic fund because they just launched, right? So Dimension in theory would be able to outpace Cosmos Hub in finding devs and finding products, even though their value add is still in question, I think. Mm-hmm. And so even if Cosmos Hub does add Cosmosm, then they're still going to have the issue of, well, do we have enough money to actually fund teams to start building here? Because people aren't going to want to just start building there for no reason, right? We need some reason.
Well, they'll say, yeah. I mean, like Stargaze and Judo and all those other chains, they launched in 2021, right? That was a long time ago. That's nearly 3 years ago now, right? Mm-hmm. That was when Cosmosm was hot, 3 years ago. And the technology has moved on a long way. Like Tendermint was already not hot in 2021. Like the SDK was already showing the cracks. Like the whole of the stack now in crypto terms is prehistoric. Like and even the Cosmosm bit, it's not quite prehistoric, but it's, you know, it's like turning up to in the Korean War with a jet fighter that was built at the tail end of the Second World War, right? It's only 4 years difference, but you're going to get shot down in a one-to-one dogfight every time. You know,
that was quite the reference.
You need somebody to develop the Super Saber, right? You need somebody to develop the Super Saber, otherwise you're fucked, right?
I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see. So is that permissionless? It's permissionless, is that right?
I think it's permissioned.
Is it? Okay. All right. That's better.
Reese, calling on Reese. Is it permission?
I would assume it would be permission because then you would have the ability to, yeah, then because you still, I'm sure the DAO still, like AADAO wants to be involved and kind of build that strategically and all that kind of stuff.
I feel suspicious about permission versus permissionless though. Like Injective is permissionless, right? And we'll get a wave of like, what, 5 to 10 props? And then what, permission. Are we supposed to just review all the code?
Injective, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
you said permission. So we get government.
Yeah. Oh well, that was an accident. We have a bunch of props saying, "Hey, we want to deploy these contracts." I've looked at a couple of them, but most of them provide no information. And so, whether it's permissioned or permissionless, we still just mostly either vote yes or abstain, which is in effect a yes, and it goes in. So,
and
what is
the
actually
people
gained
are voting are validators who may not be Rust devs, and even if they were Rust devs, they might not be Cosmosm devs.
Yeah, I think as a permissioned chain, like Injective really should be having some dedicated people going over these proposed contracts and providing advice. But, you know, on that, the voting period is just not long enough on Injective for items like that. It needs to be like, you know, to give people time to A, get to it, and B, do some kind of due diligence on the code or anything like that that's coming through, or organize some due diligence with the Injective team or something, then, you know, those voting periods need to be more like a week, not fucking 2 days.
Which was the same issue with Kajira. Kajira has permissioned as well. And so because they come through so often, everyone just votes yes. So,
well, yeah, like there's voting fatigue in Kajira. And I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone's got to vote votes yes.
I just don't think the permission model works at all. Like,
but it doesn't.
No,
like,
so I guess you know,
it's just fucking bullshit. Like, it's complete shit. You should either you're running a world computer or you're running a permission chain, right?
No, I don't agree with that.
Yeah,
I don't agree
with that. You're running you are to some extent saying like we have strong opinions or we have some kind of opinion about what should be run here, right? The question is who, right? So initially that's the core dev team. Great. So that is a bunch of nerds in a room. Okay, great.
I don't think it's like gatekeeping on what kind of stuff they want run there. I think it's more protection for the chain.
I'm not making a moral judgment there. I don't give a fuck about gatekeeping. It's really smart in a bunch of cases, right? If you want to have a really coherent product roadmap, gatekeeping is smart, smart, smart. But like, it's very, very. If you're like the core dev team has this view, right? the only thing you need to do with that then team is give them a multi-sig and then say, validators don't need to fucking vote on this. We will audit the code because we are the core dev team running this chain, which only has 100 validators. It's all decentralization theater anyway. This is not fucking decentralized. So we're running a non-decentralized permissioned chain. So we are running enterprise grade software. So let's just have a cryptographic structure that vets the fucking code rather than pretending that somebody else is going to fucking do this, because they're not. And it's our responsibility as the core dev team to do that, because what are we doing here, right? Is this our software or is this like Mickey Mouse land? And the answer is like, it's their software. So it's their responsibility to vet the fucking code. There you go. If you're running,
I think that's also the, like, that's kind of tying in the shitty Cosmos governance structure into the idea of permission versus permissionless. Like, I think it does work on Stargaze. It works there because there's a very strong team that defines what functionality that they want to be able to provide on chain. And that's really, if anybody else puts anything else forward to that, it usually gets shot down, right? Because there's a lot of communication around that.
Exactly, but they functionally pre-vet what they think should even be put forward.
100%. And so
they're doing exactly what I describe as totally fine. Like that Stargaze, you're right. Yeah, is a good example of how to do this. But they get around the fact that the validators are voting on something that, frankly, that generally validators are not qualified for or do not have the time to do.
Which going back to the SDK governance piece should 100% go away, right? Like if that was DAO focused and you had small groups that were responsible for defining what Cosmos and structures were on chain, and you had another DAO that's a business group, and another DAO that's responsible for technical validation and they approve it, and you have another one that's responsible for tokenomics and they approve it,
right?
And you actually build groups that have reviews,
right? The problem you see there is that you're now talking about sort of minimum 10 employees or something to run a Cosmos chain.
That can still be third parties.
Can afford to have 10 employees at the.
It doesn't have to be employees. You could be, you know what I mean?
Like DAO, people on DAO memberships that will even actually pick up their ledger, like, need to be paid ultimately. There's a period of time where you get grace, and then after like a year or whatever, people stop responding to Telegram.
It doesn't mean insane though. Like, there's also this paid means they're. Like somebody's making $1 million off a fucking multi-sig, which is ridiculous to me. But if they wanted to be able to do that and they wanted to be able to build a structure to do that, I agree that permissionless or permissioned is when you have validators to Null's point that are inundated with proposals and they're just seeing shit fly by and they're hitting yes, because if they hit abstain, everybody fucking comes down their throat. Or if they don't vote, it turns into like a dashboard item because validators and vote, but they don't have time to look at it or they don't have the skills to look at it. They shouldn't be looking at it in the first place. Like that is a governance issue that should be solved. And I think that's probably the biggest issue.
I mean, it's kind of, I think it's back to this thing I think about a lot, right? Which is, it's fucking telling in Cosmos that a lot depends on validators voting because people won't vote their own shares. At which point you go, if people are not going to vote, if it's not in their interest, like, what are all these systems, right? These systems are supposedly systems to build economic incentives in a decentralized way, right? Don't really buy the decentralization thing, but let's say that let's take on board we're building economic incentive systems on the internet in a secure way, right? Fault-tolerant way. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. One of those incentives apparently involves voting. People don't do it. Well, our incentive system is broken. We go on about this as validators, you know, that.
Well, let's add one more step to that. Cosmos Hub's voting period is 14 days. Let's say you figure out your product and then you have to wait 14 days for it to actually deploy it. That's kind of an eternity. That's a long time. Now, I actually like that Cosmos Hub's voting period is 14 days, but for permission Cosmosm, that just seems really bad.
Yeah, every push, right?
It's going to take a long time to get through convincing the community and all that kind of stuff and convincing the validators that I think on top of that 14 days as well though. So in the end, the 14 days might not matter so much. Do you know?
Yeah, they took them 3 years to approve Cosmos. The hell? 14 days sounds like a fucking...
We've been in the unique position to experience this from both sides because we are a cross-chain protocol.
Yeah.
And back in 2020, 2 years ago, we deployed our first set of smart contracts, our DEX, on multiple permission chains, and it's not usable. It's completely broken. So you can use it, permission CosmWasm, if you have a single smart contract that you want to upload. But if you have a product, you know, that's developed, that's maintained, that's more than just a single contract, it's not usable.
Like if you're like Atom would be a platform, and so permission becomes a challenge, like we were talking about, right? Stargaze becomes its own product, so therefore that makes a lot more sense.
It becomes impossible for it. So just to give you an idea, so we have smart contracts in our initial version of the product, 14 of them, which is a DEX, it's flash loan vaults, it's fee aggregation, buybacks, staking, and distribution. So 14 contracts. So that means 14 proposals. Now, you want to migrate something because there is a CosmWasm bug, like today. Impossible. It's just you cannot run an application that way. Now then, some smarter apps like Osmosis, they decided, all right, then let's just whitelist some addresses. So now we're whitelisted on Osmosis, and we can deploy stuff there. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's...
Wait, hold on. Let me stop you there for a second. Osmosis was the original permission chain, and they saw that it didn't work, and so they added like a whitelist system to it?
Yeah. No, it's completely broken. You cannot use permission chain. And this experience has led to our decision to make Megaloop permissionless, because if we have CosmWasm, and you know we want to, we need to make it permissionless, because we might as well not add it if we make it permissioned. Unless, you know, if you want other people to build there, if it's just, you know, your core team building stuff for your very niche specific chain, then, and you need to control the app space, the block space, then, you know, there might be reason to do it, but why limit it? You know, maybe there's a dev out there who just wants to build something smart and deploy it. So Osmosis, Injective have whitelists, and yeah, we use them, and this makes it, once you're through governance, it makes it usable.
Makes it a lot easier. Yeah.
Because for us, it's now like a permissionless chain. I mean, obviously, you know, there's oversight from governance, and, you know, we made a prop to get the whitelist, so we can start, you know, doing, you know, random shit there now. Otherwise, it gets revoked. But, you know, for all means and purposes, it's permissionless for us. So we can do security migrations. We can do upgrades. We can, you know, add features to the product. So, but it's still a roadblocker for not, or for smaller teams. You know, if just you and your buddy, you know, from high school just decided to, you know, dive into CosmWasm and React, build a cool little app, you know, you're not going through governance.
Right. Which, I mean, does the hub need that type of project or not?
Well, it's a question of what the hub wants to do.
Yeah. Right? Good point. Oh, you got some balloons going on there.
Well, if the hub wants CosmWasm, implicitly, yes. Right. If they're just, I don't know. It's back to like, do they have a plan with all this? I assume somebody does. That's the whole Atom 2.0 thing, but.
Because it wasn't Atom 2.0, and then this governance keeps coming up I can't believe we talk about this topic for this long, but that notwithstanding, this it keeps coming up every once in a while, right? And they just, this last one, like, all right, let's get this going. I think it was Jake coming out of Game of Nodes, and then obviously the push here that really probably pushed it over the edge. We can agree on that? Yeah. So that we helped with that tipping point. So now I guess there's a demand for that functionality. And now the question is, what's the implementation plan, right? So Reese did say that it is permissioned to lead off, right? And so I don't know. I guess from now there's a team that's defining what does that mean, right? And what types of projects and kind of what goes forward. He also said that Informal has a group with Neutron to ensure toes are not stepped on. And Neutron is one of those. But I was even talking about that chains that exist today. I was really talking about like what does that really mean for interchain security down? Like why would a new group that's building a, you know, raising money to be able to build some functionality use ICS if there is this concern around you know, competition or like now you're both the bank and you're, it's like getting a loan.
I think that's a weak argument, though. I don't see this toast tipping thing as being an issue at all. I mean, if it were an issue, then we wouldn't be seeing EigenLayer blow up on Ethereum, right? Ethereum is, in effect, a general smart contract platform, and yet there's still a bunch of things being built on it. There's still, you know, Arbitrum and stuff that are working off of it. I don't see an issue with toes being stepped on, unless we're talking about such a small user base that is vanishingly small value, which...
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Adam had $220 million of 24-hour volume, which is really impressive, even though it's one-fifth of Dog with Hat, but still... I mean, baby steps, we're getting towards it. Dog with Hat moved 1.1 billion USD in the last 24 hours.
It's popular, man.
I think half of that is null, right? Like, fucking arbitrage bots or some shit going on over there.
I'm still diamond fisting my fucking whiff.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Till the day I die. Anything else you want to talk about for White Whale? Anything?
I saw
what's coming up next and all that.
I saw
kind
your
of
post
stuff.
Said lots of information about alpha, right?
Alpha?
Yeah, there's always lots of alpha going on. Airdrops, you know, free money, NFTs.
Money's never free. Someone pays for it.
That's really bear market vibes you're giving off here. You know, can't have that.
Someone always pays for it.
Where's the king token, man? Where
yeah, exactly. What the hell?
Well, we've put it all on fucking number 10, so come back in 3 days.
And now it's gone, you know.
And it's gone. It's gone. Yeah, well, anything, yeah, as Serp was saying, is there anything else you want to share about the chain or the future or the anything specific?
Sure. So if you want to, you know, we've been building for years now, built through the bear. So if you want to know what we've been building all, you know, all over these years and how cross-chain protocols, the mad scientists, restaking, how that all works together, just go to our Twitter page, Discord, and start there. Have some fun. There's all the information you need. And you know, are you closing this? Shall I start thanking everybody and you know giving
praise?
We got time.
We just want to see if you had anything to say.
Yeah.
Before the Frey starts talking about a fucking Docker hard drive again.
I have another question. Would you consider interchain security, you know, now with the emergence of, you know, layer twos and, you know, layer threes and whatever, would you just call it obsolete? Like just, you know, too slow?
I think it was obsolete when it happened.
Oh, agreed.
But that's not to say that I think EigenLayer is any better. I think EigenLayer is going to basically go through what we went through in the Cosmos a couple of years ago, and that there's going to be an insane amount of chains that launch, and then people are going to realize, oh, I've got, let's say, 10 Ethereum restaked using EigenLayer, and then they realize they're actually not getting anything because these platforms aren't providing any sort of income, like not enough usage to be worth it. And
yeah, I think the entire of like $5.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm very skeptical of it from the start. I think mesh security is way more exciting, where it's kind of, for lack of a better word, incestuous. Jeez, that was quite the pause.
That was
there
good. After. I mean, what else are you going to say? I got nothing to add to it.
There was a tense pause here, man.
No tense. I think we talked about it early on. Is it? Being kind of worthless at the go, but yeah, I agree. What's going on with mesh security anyway? What's the latest?
I don't know. Jay keeps saying that it's still going, so I trust Jay. That's all I got.
I thought there was a testnet, I thought, right? Like with Osmosis or something else like that? And Sunny announced something?
Yeah, there's some stuff going on, I think. I don't know. Whatever, man. obviously, like, you know, I've gone a completely different way where now, like, I spend a lot of my week thinking about digital cash and and thinking about like how you actually spend money securely without exposing a bunch of shit about yourself and whatnot. And I just think the interop layer is the protocol. I think that's actually the I think everything actually you need to do with all these networks, you can literally just do the absolute majority of the work at the edge. And actually the only thing you really you need to use a blockchain for is settlement.
Hold on, what do you mean when you say the edge in this context?
So you have okay, so like IBC is a stateful protocol, which ultimately results in an asset coming to rest on a blockchain. It just so happens that you probably fired it in from a different blockchain, right? But actually, and this gets into complexities of like, what data representation do you want? Where does state live? How do you model it? What cryptography are you using? But like, that layer actually is semi-stateful, and you don't actually, it all comes down to finality, right? And how you settle finality. But if in that layer you don't assume that your input is a blockchain, and you just you assume that your input is itself, right? And it's just an API or whatever, and it's just a protocol layer that will ultimately settle something on a blockchain as a proof. I mean, this is basically how all Ethereum L2s work, right? Ultimately, they aggregate some hashes or whatever the meme word is, rollups, right? Or whatever. Like they aggregate some hashes. They aggregate it direct to their cyclical graph or something like that, or a Merkle root or something like that, all the way up to Ethereum. Okay, and they settle it on a much slower rate of finality than their actual system. So this is already like very well understood. That's how a lot of L2s work, and essentially your interchain protocol can actually do a lot of that work. And I think that's kind of how Arbitrum works, right? Under the hood, it's something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of just bearish completely on, I actually just like really, really bearish in general on actually sharing anything on blockchains, really. I think the technology, the thing is, no, I mean, I would say it's cause I've spent like the last 2 months reading consensus papers, right? But I've come back around to the idea that the thing that's really exciting about blockchains is the consensus engine stuff. And the state stuff is like, wait, why am I sharing the contents of the database with the entire world? This is madness. Like, it just doesn't need to happen. Like, the state can be done in a different way. And you can still do DeFi and loads of other stuff. It's just you won't get front run every time you want to scratch your balls. Like, you can just not broadcast that data and not broadcast your bank balance while you're doing it. Christ.
Dude, your excitement about blockchain is exactly what we're talking about with Adam. Like, you're excited about the potential, not actually the reality.
Yeah. My excitement comes back down to
like holy shit, have you seen this technology? It's amazing. The state, it's incredible. What are you gonna do with it?
Consensus are fucking really cool. And the technology that's gone into them over the last really few years cool. as a result of blockchain interest is insane. It's so, so powerful and interesting. And the power to do like, you know, build economic systems and smart contracts and all that sort of stuff. And like currently what we're doing is we're broadcasting all of our financial data online in a way that's not secure, in a way that is radically detrimental to our economic, our personal financial health. It's baffling. Like the more you step back and think about what we've built here with this really cool technology, the more and more baffling it is. And So I don't know. Like I think the one thing that Mesh and Eigenlayer and all these guys get right is that TVL needs to be in the interop layer. That's like my TLDR, like a couple of months of thinking about this quite intensely and reading too many papers on consensus and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, no, they are right. They are right. They are right from an operational perspective. They're right as far as I understand the research in this area. And I think they're right on an economic basis. I just think there's a bunch of other, that's a very emerging design space, right? Is essentially, yeah. I think, where I would come down on. And I think it's quite difficult to iterate in that direction from, I already have a blockchain and I want to do a protocol like Eigenlayer or Mesh. Whereas if you start from the space of, I don't want to have the requirement of a blockchain, but I want to settle finality somewhere and it could be a blockchain. You're in a very different design space where you're having to build something very general purpose. And it's really hard, right? Like, you know, I'm just fucking sitting on the beanbag thinking about this bullshit right at the moment. Like, effectively. Like, do I have the answers? Do I fuck? If I had the answers, I'd be on a beach right now, man. Like, of course.
Sitting on a beanbag.
Yeah. Well, that's where you do your thinking, isn't it? You sit like you
just humanity mushrooms, degree.
At least that's what my humanity's degree was like 15 years ago.
Where's the TVL sit? Don't even know.
So when are we launching a Robot Jocks meme coin? That's the real question, right?
I don't know. With hat?
Everybody kills you right here.
Could we launch a meme coin that is worth $2 billion? I don't know. I don't know if we got it.
That's easy.
Is it?
You just win 2 billion tokens and list one token for $1.
There you go. TVL set. Master plan. Let's do that with King.
The first $1 trillion asset in Cosmos.
I don't want to get a jail, for sale. Man. There's only one for sale.
Liquidity one. $100.
Anything else in the news you want to talk about? The Stride prop and Stargaze? You guys want to talk about anything else?
I mean, the Stride prop and Stargaze is interesting, isn't it?
I thought it was a little bit interesting.
Yeah. What's happening there? Can you give the TLDR?
Proposal 267, which finalized last week. I think when we were going to meet last week, I think it was still in the middle of it. It is the community. So the community actually rejected it. 52%, 399 million stars. Stride requests 10% of the community pool, about $1.8 million to liquid stake and stars for ST stars to use, quote, in DeFi and allow NFT minting as all stars are staked. The interesting part, I think, that came out of this was the kind of vote breakdown was, at least from the validator side, which, again, is stupid fucking metric for any sort of governance breakdown. Let's just get that straight. It was primarily validators that were part of the Stride group. Some might say cartel that are in that voted yes, and everybody else voted no for this. I think
proof
for the most
of
part,
lobbying here, right?
With say that one more time.
Proof of lobby.
It is a. I think that's a way of saying it. Yeah, yeah. So I think it's just again, it goes back to governance, which is one of the underlying things in here. It's tough to have. And again, I think this was a, I don't think this was a great proposal. I think there's way too much money and it just seemed to be a little bit ridiculous to me, but whatever, or way too many stars. And, but the idea that validators are voting on items that affect their own ability to make and earn is fucking stupid.
I've literally just realized that this is, a citable example for a thing that I predicted would happen in my paper. And I'm going to put it in my paper that's currently at the second draft stage.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what that Stride group is on Stargaze, to be honest. So I'm not sure how well it aligns or what the percentages are, but I'm sure you'll do that.
I'm going to pull the data and have a look because if this does line up, it's just a fucking slam dunk. Hey, here's an example of like if you one of the things that's interesting about like at least my understanding of like a lot of people I've talked to in the kind of academic world is that a lot of people's examples are Ethereum. Like people aren't really aware of alts other than Ethereum. So people will theorize, well, at least the general people, like this is not strictly true. There are loads of people working on loads of different things, like whatever. The tiny little window into academia that I have, people are often not aware of other alts that aren't Ethereum. And so they'll say like, oh, I think this will happen. And there's quite a lot of times genuinely where you go like, dude, that has happened in Cosmos. And they were like, what? And you're like, I'll dig out a proposal for you. I'll show you. And especially where it's like non-technical stuff, where it's like organizational design stuff or business school stuff or whatever. And they're kind of from that end of the pond where they're like, oh yeah, you know, you can see a conflict of interest. And you're like, conflict of interest, is it? Let me tell you. Or whatever it might be. So, but anyway.
Yeah,
this one could do me well. Thank you, Rama, for
2,500 voted accounts. I'm not sure how many wallet holders there are in Stargaze, but I know it's significantly higher than 2,500.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It this site this well tired of talking about Cosmos governance, but
this is the
shit don't work, yo.
Cosmos governance podcast.
It don't work, yo.
I mean, this is historically the Cosmos governance podcast. Now on our 110th episode,
yeah,
and tax advice podcast.
Of course. I mean, that was really that's kind of the subtitle of this whole thing.
The only tax advice is to get tax advice and don't trust our tax advice.
Yeah.
Tax advice. I'm just happy to be past April.
US tax year now?
Well, April 15th. Well, I mean, tax year is calendar year, but for business taxes, we're due in middle of March here in the US, and then personal taxes are in the middle of April. And so those went out. So that's always painful, depending on what you do in terms of.
And you're not in jail yet.
So. Not yet. Well, they're usually a couple months behind or a couple of years behind CENTCOM. So in 2026, I assume we'll do
government
a live stream.
Only comes after you in the bear market when you stop paying tax, and they're like, "Hang on a minute, motherfucker."
Well,
it's not the deal.
I'm getting notices of true ups for 2022. So that's like basically here in April of 2024, they're finalizing 2022 tax year. So it's usually about right. I figure 16, 18 months behind until they do whatever. So I just got a PA notice for something and some other shit. Nothing crazy. Just
is that like an audit? Some sort of audit?
No, I mean, the taxes in the US are like it's a really difficult game of really complicated rules, right? So you end up hiring professionals to do that, or if you do it on your own. And then those entities have the same data, right? So like anybody, crypto obviously is a pretty large blind spot for them. So that's the reason why there's so much consternation. But if you're getting, you know, from K-1s here in the US, which is like a distribution that's coming in from a private entity of some sort, or if you're getting, 1099s or anything coming in from W-2s, they get a copy of all that shit. And so at some point, the computers run and they say, oh, this is what this person submitted, and this is what the data that we have. And they say, this is off, so therefore you owe us money or we owe you money. And it's sometimes the latter, but mostly the former, right? And it's up to you as the individual to be able to go fight that, right? So even though you're presenting data, they have their own data, and that is the accurate information. And so therefore you're in this position of, and then if you're wrong by that amount, then you go back and you end up paying penalties from the point of when that was due. And so it ends up becoming this very vicious cycle around whatever. So I think there's some famous quote somebody came up with, but the idea is basically it's like a rigged game where you're in this mire of complexity, and then they have the actual answer. But if you're wrong, then you get fucking charged. It's basically how the taxes in the US work.
I wish it wasn't so adversarial, because every time I've actually interacted with the IRS, they've been like super pleasant, mm-hmm. very clear. They knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And yet they just get shit on. Like the IRS isn't the one that's doing this. Come on, guys.
No, they're doing it. What are you talking about?
Well, it's the difference between the computer and the thing sending out the notifications, and like the people you talk to who work there. The people you talk to who work there, if their job is to talk to people all day, they're just like, man, I just hope I have a day where somebody doesn't shout at me and I can go home and enjoy insert name of TV show I'm watching. Or Robot Jocks, if they have any taste.
If they have taste. Exactly.
There have definitely been a few occasions where I've like gone into a customer service call and been like, listen, I'm really fired up, so there might be some F-bombs flying around. Know that they're not pointed towards you. They're pointed at the situation. And then almost universally, the rep is like all fired up and ready to go. They're like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah.
Like, in a positive way. Like,
yeah, I mean, just again, like,
go ahead.
You're right. It's like separating the entity from the individual, right? Like when you call and bitch about something in the retail space or whatever else, it's not that person. Right. It's just the rules structure and the governance and everything else that goes around that. So it's like the King token.
Fuck off with that.
You could fucking hate King token, but you can't hate null. Right. It's like you got to separate the individual from the situation that's there. It's not his fault.
The situation. You know, I don't think I've never interacted with the Australian revenue people. Here, I think you just do it all with your accountant. Like, if you got a problem, your accountant rings you up and is like, hey, man, we got a problem.
Are they in the hook for anything, though? Like, if that person fucks up, is that on you or on them?
Well, it depends. So, I had an accountant that would not fucking do things the way I wanted them, because they were too scared. They're like, we don't want to get audited. And I'm like, it's me getting audited, not you. And they're like, we don't want to be associated with an audit. Can you go somewhere else? So, I mean, I wasn't getting audited. They were just
that's also what happens when you call your company Big Balls Blockchain, isn't it?
Yeah, bigswinganddick.com.